Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, and I would say always optimistically. How optimistic? How can I be optimistic? Well, here's how I do that. We know what the cause of climate change is. It's fossil fuel pollution, primarily, not exclusively, but that's the major chunk of it. And when we know what a problem is, then we can move to finding a solution. Technologically speaking, the solutions are all at hand. We don't have to invent anything new to address climate change. So having the solution, knowing what the problem is, that's what makes me optimistic. I'm optimistic that as a species, we will have the sense to address climate change before it's too late. Part of the good news is the incredible amount of data being collected minute by minute, day by day, year by year by organizations like NASA and NOAA. Hundreds of deeply involved agencies who can tell us what's going on in the world, down to the minutest details, such as sea level rise of 1 millimeter, data gathered by laser satellites monitoring sea level around the world on a moment-by-moment basis. I encourage you to visit the NASA website, the NOAA website, do some Googling around about where data comes from, like, let's say, the Argo system, which is measuring, making hundreds of thousands of measurements per week on the salinity of the oceans, the currents, the temperatures, and so on. An incredible amount of data. Part of that good news is that knowing what's causing our climate disruptions and knowing that we can fix it, knowing the cause. The question, of course, will we fix it or will we keep putting off solutions and in doing that burden future generations with the fruits of our thoughtless and selfish non-decisions? I believe we will do what's right, but it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to take a change of direction from where we are as a species, where we're headed right now. So any talk about climate change right now in the Pacific Northwest, right here on the Puget Sound, any conversation that didn't involve talking about anomalous, to use certainly a euphemism about the recent temperature issues that we had to deal with, the heat issues, the heat wave, the heat dome, and so on, any conversation at this point without talking about that wouldn't be missing part of the point. So I want to quote here for a second from a guy named Christopher Burt. He's a weather historian, wrote a book called Extreme Weather. And here's his quote. It says, "This is the most anomalous regional extreme heat event to occur anywhere on Earth since temperature records began. Nothing can compare." We lived through that. It was a major, major event. And as you certainly know, hundreds of people died. There was disruptions of public utilities, roads buckled, and business came to a halt in a lot of cases. And so a historic event. I want to talk a little bit, too, about, you know, what this means in terms of looking forward. I hear people say, well, guess might as well get used to it. It's the new normal. No, it is not the new normal. The new normal is that things will continue to get worse, that heat will become hotter, that cold will become colder, that wet will become wetter and dry will become drier. That's what the new normal is. As we continue to add to the fossil fuel pollution in the atmosphere, things will continue to get more severe. So this is not the new normal. Now, there have certainly been heat waves in the past. In fact, heat waves is part of climate history. I'm going to refer to Dr. Michael Mann. He's a professor of atmospheric science at Penn State, and here's what he had to say about that. He said, "Might a heat dome have developed out west without climate change? Sure." And he's referencing the recent heat dome that we experienced here. "Yeah, sure. That could have happened without climate change. Might it have been as extreme as what we're witnessing without climate change? Almost surely not." That's once again Dr. Michael Mann from Penn State. There's a relatively new field in looking at climate and climate change, and that field is attribution science, because the question is always asked, well, what did this have to do with climate change? We've always had tornadoes, hurricanes, cold snaps, heat waves. We've always had those things. So it's pretty easy to say when we experience one of them, well, that's just the way it goes. Attribution science is parsing out what we might expect from those events versus what we are experiencing from those events thus the term attribution science. It's a growing field, and Dr. Mann, in his comment about what we just saw almost certainly being more severe because of climate change, is a part of attribution science. Climate change doesn't create new events per se. It makes existing events more intense. The Department of Defense refers to climate change as a threat multiplier, and that's certainly an appropriate term. Nothing new, just makes things worse. So how much worse was it? Well, preliminary data from NOAA's records shows that 55 U.S. stations had the highest temperatures in their history in the week ending June 28. More than 400 daily record highs were set. Over the past year, the nation has experienced about 38,000 daily record highs versus about 18,500 record lows, consistent with the 2-to-1 ratio of hot to cold records set in recent years. One of the things that science deniers like to do as much as anything is to draw into question the scientific community's ability to make predictions about future weather states. Well, let's just imagine that we rewound the clock 10 years or so, and we were getting predictions that temperatures would hit up in the hundreds in Seattle, Portland, and Tacoma. And by the way, up in Canada, up to 118 degrees in one spot up there. So if we'd have predicted that 10 years ago as an outcome of science, there would have been those who poo-pooed the idea. Now it's here, and yet there's some resistance to accepting and understanding the science, that this is what happens as we continue to pollute the environment and as the Earth gets warmer and warmer. While the weather in the Northwest has been a national, in fact, even a world focus here recently, plenty of other folks are experiencing anomalous weather, at least anomalous in terms of historical weather conditions. So right now in the western United States, 81% of the West is experiencing what's categorized as severe to exceptional drought. They have specific definitions of what they mean by that, they being the scientists that track those kind of things. 81% of the West is experiencing record drought, and that's the first time in history that that index has gone above 80%. So everywhere we look, we see the signs of the ever-warming world, the receding Arctic ice, the droughts, the rising sea level, the heat waves, the loss of glaciers. The list is very long, it's very convincing. Convincing for anyone who is willing to look at the data. I'm thinking back at the days of good old Galileo. You remember those days, right? And he was in court charged with some crime because he was claiming that the Earth was not the center of the universe, and that the data that had led him to come to this conclusion was the invention of the telescope. And looking through the telescope, he could see the satellites going around Jupiter and some of the other planets. And of course, that would mean prima facie that the Earth was not the center of everything. And in the court, he offered to those who had charged him with crimes, well, take a look through the telescope. Well, that's what we're doing right now. And there are folks now, as back then, who aren't willing to look through the telescope. And that's just the way it goes. Another aspect of what we see as climate change is that it's never just one thing. We live in a tightly linked system where our transportation, our communications, our supply lines, our public utilities are very closely tied to each other, and weather and other kinds of climate impacts that affect one system affect others. So, for instance, in the recent hot weather we experienced here in the Pacific Northwest, there were thousands upon thousands of customers that were without electricity. So things get really hot. People need electricity for air conditioning. Same time things get really hot, then utility systems get challenged. So it's never just one thing. Our healthcare system became quickly overloaded. Our ability to respond to people in distress became strained. And let's keep in mind, we're fairly early on in this roller coaster ride that we're taking with the climate. So once again, I'm at that place where we rightfully ask, okay, so what are we going to do? And we're going to have to do something more than just shouting at our TV sets, not knocking that activity. I participated in that activity plenty of times myself. So let me ask you, and I'll be asking myself these same questions at the same time. How long has it been since you sent an email or made a phone call to an elected representative? So you've already brought the attention of that person to your concerns about the climate. Time to do it again. When was the last time you wrote a letter to the editor expressing your concern about the future? When was the last time you attended a meeting with a group of like-minded people where you took some specific action to express your concerns, your worries, your alarm about the climate? So easy to slip into a form of denial, which is expressed as, well, it's not my fault, I care, I vote, and those people who are denying the realities of climate change, well, they're the problem, and so somebody take care of that problem. We are blessed to live in a reasonably progressive part of the United States, a reasonably progressive part of the state, and so we are doing some good stuff here, and we do have a lot of elected representatives who are concerned about the future of the climate. But without winning statewide and national elections, without electing folks to positions of power and responsibility, positions where they can make decisions that make a difference, then we're not going to succeed in this struggle to create a livable future. So getting out the vote, critically important. And I got to say that every election coming up for really decades to come, more than likely, is going to be critically important. It's not like, well, we can have one successful election and we're all good. It's going to require effort during election after election after election. One of the most effective things we can do is join in with national groups and get out the vote campaigns. They've been proven to work to make a difference. A lot of our elections are decided by a razor margin, and so getting out the vote can make a difference, and we can make a difference in getting out of the vote. It's hard work. It's boring work, but you know, it's work that's got to be done. So you can find out organizations that you can be a part of and doing this kind of work. Just do a internet search on Get Out the Vote and just go from there. Common Cause is another place you can do a search for, and that website will help you find places where you can put yourself to work. I would say that the height of pessimism is knowing what's going on, yet really not doing anything to change the course of what's going on. So optimism to me means that, yes, I am going to work, I'm going to believe I can make a difference, and I do the work. And of course, I am just one voice, you are just one voice. We can amplify our voices by joining with like-minded folks. And there's a lot of wonderful organizations out there that are concerned about the future of the climate. There are mainstream organizations like Audubon Society or the League of Women Voters or the Sierra Club. All of those organizations and many others are mainstream organizations that are concerned about the future of the climate. If you want to get a little more fine-tuned, you can join with an organization like my organization, Citizens Climate Lobby. We've been working for a number of years for a national price on fossil fuels with a dividend back to the populace in general as a way of overcoming what could be called the green premium. Usually green things right now, by green I mean environmentally friendly, cost more than stuff that comes via the fossil fuel industry in one way or the other. That's cheaper because the fossil fuel industry isn't paying for all the damage they're causing to the environment. We need to level that playing field. So a fee on fossil fuels would be one way of doing that. Other organizations like 350 or Indivisibles, lots of great organizations. Find one that fits your worldview and go to work with them. So that's it for today. I'd love to get an email from you if you think there's something I don't talk about that we should, or you disagree with me especially. I'd love to hear from you. Contact me via email, John, J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. The CCL part's for Citizens Climate Lobby. So here I am, optimistically inviting you to always live like the mountain is out. Take care now.